I would much rather have a flexible work from home policy than any office perk.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Well, you got it.
It's true. I'm in the right place.
Hi, welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm Geek Life reporter Kurt Schlosser.
We're coming to you from our newsroom in Seattle, where we report each day on what's happening around us in technology, science, and innovation. What happens here matters everywhere, and every week on this show, we talk about some of the biggest and most interesting stories we've been covering. Coming up this week, we'll talk about an innovation in solar energy backed by Bill Gates that promises to dramatically reduce global carbon emissions. Our exclusive interview with one of Amazon's biggest rivals, would you say?
Adversaries, maybe?
Adversaries. She defied Amazon to win a second term on the Seattle City Council, and Monica spoke with her this week. We'll find out what City Council member Shama Sawant plans to do next. Plus, Amazon's new auto reordering smart shelf, the latest in cutting-edge tech office spaces, and in the final segment, it's the triumphant return. Monica, you might not have even been here when this was around. Of our Name That Tech Tune contest. Do you remember this?
It maybe rings a bell.
All right, it's coming back, and it's your chance to win a GeekWire t-shirt. So let's start with Shama Sawant. This is your story of the week, Monica. Set the stage for us on this one.
Sure. So I sat down this week with Councilmember Sawant following a really dramatic comeback victory in the Seattle City Council races. And these elections really became a national spectacle because of the last-minute donation from Amazon that they made, you know, 3 weeks before the election. It was more than $1 million in this effort to unseat the city council. So I just wanted to do a postmortem with her and find out what she's planning next year.
What did you learn from Councilmember Sawant?
I learned that she is definitely emboldened by her re-election victory and that she does not plan to slow down any of the policies that have rankled the business community and Amazon in particular over the past session. Number one question I had to ask is, do you plan to revive the head tax?
Given all of the context in which this election was won, absolutely the priorities have to be to tax big business and the wealthy, to fund affordable housing and fund services. There is overwhelming support among Seattleites for a tax on large corporations to fund vital services and affordable housing. So, I mean, it's clear which way we need to go.
For those who are not following along, this was a really kind of ugly tax battle that happened in Seattle last year. The city council wanted to pass a per-employee tax on the biggest companies in the city. Amazon would have paid the most out of anyone. And the money would have gone toward funding services for the homeless and affordable housing. The city council passed it. Amazon kind of revolted. They threatened to slow their growth down here. They said that the city council was hostile and they didn't know if they could work with them. And in an abrupt reversal, the city council repealed the tax just a few weeks after unanimously passing it. And it's really kind of hung over the discussion of the tech industry and Seattle politics ever since. I asked if there was any scenario in which she could see herself partnering with Amazon or the business community to set a direction and a set of priorities for the city of Seattle. And she said that it would never happen, that it's not even really worth considering because Amazon would never come to the table.
Look at what just happened. Amazon and big business went to war against a tax that would have been like pocket change for the billionaires. And on top of that, then they went to war against the democratic process of the city and attempted a hostile takeover. If the billionaires were to send me a message saying we want to work on actually putting forward progressive policies, I'd be happy to do that. But it's a ludicrous notion that that would even happen because that has never happened.
So as you heard there, she is definitely going to continue playing hardball with Amazon. And one thing that came up a few times in our interview that was interesting was this idea that Amazon was using Seattle as a test lab. And if they got away with this effort to unseat the Seattle City Council here, then they were going to be emboldened to do similar things elsewhere. She's not entirely wrong that Amazon does kind of use Seattle as a test lab. I mean, this is where Amazon Go, the cashierless grocery stores were born. This is where they test out a lot of new innovations before rolling them out nationwide. And they did take a gamble on this election by donating more than $1 million, which is a lot of money for a local race. Not all their bets pay off in Seattle, and this one did not seem like it did. They didn't really succeed in electing more business-friendly candidates for the most part. You could make the case that it backfired because the new city council seems like it's poised to be more progressive than the previous one. One thing that we know for sure is this donation caught the attention of some very big names on the national political stage, like Senator Bernie Sanders, who's running for president. He actually endorsed Sawant and some other candidates, which is pretty unusual. You know, he doesn't really have any skin in the game. Seattle is not very close to his home state of Vermont, but he spoke out very boldly about this donation. And that was another thing that came up in my interview with Sawant. She said she thought it was really important that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren weighed in. And she really wants to pass these very progressive policies in Seattle as a model for other cities. She also kind of sees it as a test lab for this kind of democratic socialist agenda that she wants to see rolled out far beyond Seattle.
Very interesting. Absolutely. Okay, so that is Monica Nicholsberg's interview with Shama Sawant. You can find that on geekwire.com. I was closely tracking this week a story that GeekWire reporter Nat Levy wrote about Amazon's newest Dash initiative. And Kurt, this ties into some startup coverage that you've done as well. This is the Amazon Smart Shelf. It is a shelf that senses when supplies are low and automatically reorders them. And this whole concept of automatic reordering is not new. This, though, is a new implementation of it. Amazon has built this Dash technology into other products, most notably the Dash buttons that they discontinued earlier this year. The idea being that when you're running low on detergent or other household items, you're able to basically just press a button and automatically reorder the product. But this Dash replenishment service takes it even a step further because you don't have to have any intervention. It essentially senses when the coffee is low or the detergent is low, and it automatically reorders them. And then this new smart shelf essentially extends that model to small businesses. So in your storeroom closet, you're never again going to run out of Post-its.
It did catch my eye this week. I never had any use for those Dash buttons in my own home, but I have written about this company in Seattle called Bottomless. You may remember some of our coverage around them. One of our contributors actually tested it in his house. Same technology, a scale that sits on your kitchen counter. You set your bag of coffee beans on top of it. As it gets lower, uses Wi-Fi and machine learning to automatically reorder your coffee, so you're never out of fresh beans. I mean, we wrote about this company a year and a half ago or so. They're still going. They raised $1.9 million earlier this spring. And Amazon's efforts here this week caught the attention of the CEO and the founder. And he reached out and tweeted about it. And he's very much paying attention.
He emailed you. They noticed this.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Said, hey, can we get a mention in that Amazon story?
So. It's interesting because a lot of times you'll ask startups when a big tech company comes in and does essentially what they've been doing, like, boy, gosh, this is going to put you out of business. And you know that the pat answer always is no, no, no. Category awareness. They're really doing us a favor by jumping into this, which I always take as I look at that skeptically.
I bet you know what I'm going to think about this. I'm not into it. I didn't like the Dash buttons. I don't like this. Maybe I'm just anti-technology, but really I think that if you don't have time to pick up coffee at the grocery store, if you don't have time to – or even order something on Amazon, it is not a time-consuming process, then maybe you should slow down a little bit. And especially if it's a food product, I think we're getting more and more removed from actually engaging with the quality and selection of our food, and I don't think that that's a good thing. I don't want Amazon picking my coffee beans. I want to see them and smell them and choose them myself.
I'm with you, Monica, in part because I've been looking at our recycling bin every week and the number of Amazon boxes that are in there and realizing just how easy it is to order from Amazon already. Now, granted, that's replacing things that I would have bought at the store and perhaps used gasoline and polluted the environment to buy them. But the people who are delivering them are essentially doing the same thing. It depends on the efficiency of the route. You've covered a lot of this. I don't know. I just feel like it's already easy enough to order on Amazon. Do they really have to make it so easy that you don't even know it's coming?
Right. If it's automatically reordering, there's probably not an option to group packages together, which I don't know if you're doing that if you're doing a lot of Amazon ordering, but there is an option to select the day that your packages come on and then they'll be grouped together. So it'll be less fossil fuels for drive time and less packaging than if you'd had it individually delivered, say, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Is that what the Amazon delivery day is about, the Prime delivery day?
Yes. It's Wednesdays, I think, for most people.
But that's grouped on the truck, not necessarily in the box.
It's both.
Oh.
Interesting.
Because we've all gotten that huge box with the tiny item in it. That's
right. I mean, that really bums me out. I've been trying to, if I order from Amazon, select the Amazon day so that everything comes together and I can at least feel a little bit better about the carbon footprint.
I should point out, in general, in the Dash service, they give you the option of canceling the order. They'll send you a message saying, hey, your auto reordering system just purchased this on your behalf. Is this okay, basically? So it's not completely without human intervention, but it's kind of getting there to where the robots are just going to be doing our shopping by sensing what we have left in the pantry. All right, so that is Amazon's new Smart Shelf. It will be available to Amazon Business customers starting next year. Kurt, you've been on like this grand tour of the Seattle region's tech office spaces, visiting and reporting on new openings of startups and tech giants. And just this past week, you went to Zipwhip.
You're right. I seem to have taken on this beat that involves assessing the design and culture of our local startups and big tech companies and how they work and how they put those spaces together. But if I asked you guys, what are the names Hendrix, Vedder, Cobain, McLemore, what would you say those mean to you, Monica?
Seattle musicians.
You're half right.
I know the answer to this one, but I don't want to spoil it.
And I can name many more, but they're also the names of office conference rooms, meeting rooms, one-on-one rooms, quiet rooms, phone booths, you name it. Every tech company that I've been to lately is that, you know, they're taking pride in this local culture that they're imbuing into the space. And part of the fun they're having is naming these rooms, which used to be conference room 2A or Microsoft meeting room number Z, whatever. It's crazy the way they all seem to be thinking the same. And it looks like they're all using the same designer too.
Interesting. Like, how would you describe it? Is it like a Pacific Northwest motif?
I gotta say on the inside, how we all sort of groan and moan about how all the apartment buildings look the same around Seattle and so forth. It's not as bad as that on the inside of these spaces. Some of them, I mean, whether it's a gleaming office tower like F5, which totally changed the Seattle skyline, or a rejuvenated older office building that suddenly has new sort of tech startup life in it, they're doing a pretty good job of giving people this option of how they want to work. You know, it's interesting. They talk a lot about, well, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, you can stand or sit or go lie on a giant beanbag under the stairs or, you know, be in a quiet room with low lights. Or in the case of Sonos, you can adjust the music to your specific work area. Google, Facebook, Juno Therapeutics. I mean, even the Amazon Spheres. I mean, look what they did there. They completely flipped the script and stuck people with 50,000 plants. But it does strike me each time I do this, and there seem to be a lot lately, that they're all playing along the same book. And it's all sort of modeled around retention and recruitment, right?
So when you go into these spaces, are you seeing individual office spaces for some people, or is it entirely open?
The big thing now that they like to brag about is keeping the floor plate around the windows and views open. So people like Monica and I don't run into your office when we go to try to look out the window. Instead, everybody has a clear path to views, which are sort of, you know, this, especially in the case of Zipwhip, they've got these killer views of sunsets and the Elliott Bay and the Olympic Mountains. And same thing at F5, where they're up above everything in their 48-story tower. Generally, what those companies do is they push the cafes out there. They push the sort of the general seating. Expedia is doing the same thing at their huge waterfront campus. Any gathering areas where people might get together to have group meetings or, I mean, even the ping pong tables are pushed against the outer windows. And there are still ping pong tables everywhere I've been. I mean, you've been doing this, Todd, for how long?
There's always been ping pong tables. What about foosball?
I don't see that much foosball. There's video games. There's always an Xbox. There's drink carts. I mean, this is nothing new to anybody who works in tech, but the fact that it's still happening and it still seemingly works.
What I've seen happening is it was at the big tech companies, and now it's infiltrating down into every startup. They feel like they have to follow this. And I agree with you. It starts to feel very generic.
Yeah. I went to another startup this week, just a robotics startup, down in Soto, south of the stadium. And it was like the complete opposite end of the spectrum, because it was as scrappy gets. They were in a warehouse that if I had to go in there at night, I would think twice about it. They're building this robot meant to be used on farms and big rural properties. And they could care less about ping pong, for God's sakes. There's like four guys in there, and it's cold, and it's dark, and they're working hard, and they don't care about whether there's a kombucha machine.
Does this make people more productive? Does it improve the way they work, or is it all for show?
It's tough to say. I like to come to work every day because it gets me away from home. But I've written these stories, these sort of work survey stories where they're all about recruitment and what it takes to get people to leave one job for another. And one of the bigger things that shows up on those surveys is that tech workers, especially in cities like Seattle where the traffic is horrendous, they want this ability to work from home, work remotely. So does it really matter if there's a comfy, cool orange couch at the office? Is that going to get you to sit in an hour's worth of traffic or a ping pong table or beer on tap? I don't know whether that moves productivity when you're actually there, if you've made the effort to come into the office. It certainly seems comfortable and creates this sort of sense that, oh, we don't work at a warehouse or in a 1950s office building behind a closed door. We're all part of sort of this thing.
I will say the one that has blown me away, and Monica, I know you and I are on opposite sides of this debate, was Facebook's Seattle engineering office. When you go up on the upper deck, the fire pit up there, the view of Lake Union is amazing. But I know you went to a different Facebook office more recently, Monica, and you had a different takeaway.
I mean, the office is beautiful and there are a lot of amenities. I just don't think I would want to work in such a big corporate space. You know, this is some of their signs were, I think, trying to be cheeky. I took them to be a little tone deaf given the current moment. But overall, I am totally with the employees that Kurt was talking about. I would much rather have a flexible work from home policy than any office perk.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Well, you got it.
That's true. I'm in the right place.
All right. You can check out Kurt's tour of ZipWhip on GeekWire. You can see the show notes on this podcast for links to that and also the other stops in his months-long tour of Seattle tech office spaces. Coming up, an innovation in solar energy backed by Bill Gates promises to dramatically reduce global carbon emissions.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg and Kurt Schlosser. You're listening to the GeekWire podcast, and we're talking about some of the top stories of the week, the most interesting stories of the week. I got to say, I was fascinated by one of the stories that I got to write about this week. It's a company called Heliogen. It's based in Los Angeles, but it's backed by Bill Gates and other investors, and it's run by an entrepreneur by the name of Bill Gross. They have figured out a way to use mirrors in an array in the desert and other sun-drenched areas to create intense heat energy that exceeds 1,000 degrees Celsius, and that's about 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. And the reason that is so notable is that that is the temperature at which you can start to create steel and cement, things that would otherwise require fossil fuels like coal to create, but you can do it in a completely clean way because they can concentrate the rays of the sun through these mirrors to create this intense energy. It's fascinating. And the way that they're doing it is even more interesting because it's through software. That's the innovation that they came up with. He's using the GPU, the graphics processing unit, to direct the sunlight from these mirrors in such a precise way that it creates this intense heat. And some of these industrial processes that they're talking about are accounting for as much as a fifth of the world's carbon emissions. So if this type of innovation could get rolled out, it would be dramatic in terms of its potential impact. So earlier, Monica, you were saying that you're not so big on technology, but this is pretty cool.
I should say I am very big on technologies that reduce our dependence on fossil fuels.
Yeah. So what did you think of this?
I think this is fascinating. You know, I've heard Bill Gates and others say that while it would be great to shift to all renewable energy right now, we don't have the technology to do so. Particularly, he always uses solar power as an example because, you know, he says we can't make a battery big enough to power Japan during its 2 weeks without the sun and situations like that. So the idea that we can get more efficient in harnessing solar power is really exciting to me.
There's a fascinating backstory on this one. People out there may remember that Bill Gates gave a talk about renewable energy and the importance of getting to zero carbon emissions around the planet back in 2010 at a TED conference in Long Beach.
If you gave me only one wish for the next 50 years, I can pick who's president, I can pick a vaccine, which is something I love, or I could pick that this thing that's half the cost with no CO2 gets invented. This is the wish I would pick. This is the one with the greatest impact.
Bill Gross, the entrepreneur behind this project, had been trying to come up with innovations in this realm for quite a while. So he had sort of the beginnings of the ideas. In fact, he's been working on this since he was a teenager, literally, and saw cars lined up to get gas in Southern California during some of the shortages. So after the TED talk, Bill Gross got in touch with Bill Gates. Bill Gates invited him up to do a brainstorming session. This was the idea that came out of that. So it really is interesting. I remember that TED talk and everyone was, you know, somewhat inspired, but also somewhat daunted by the challenge that Bill Gates laid down. And here you have somebody who said, wait a second, I can do that. Help me do it.
It's pretty remarkable. And it's really interesting to look at Bill Gates's investments in this space as kind of a roadmap to where many people think we need to go. He's seems to be trying to use his money to chip away at different sources of carbon emissions. So, you know, he's invested in Beyond Meat, trying to cut down on the carbon emissions from agriculture. He is looking at ways to improve solar power and cut down on carbon emissions from industrial materials. He's investing in nuclear energy. It'll be interesting to see which of these really takes off and is able to move the needle because all of them are still pretty early stage.
The other notable thing here is this is not a Gates Foundation initiative. So you already have Bill Gates taking on global health, education, and here he is taking on carbon emissions kind of in his spare time. All right, so that is Heliogen. You can read that story and everything that we talked about on the show this week on geekwire.com. You can find links in the show notes on this podcast. Coming up next, though, we're not done. It's your chance to win a GeekWire t-shirt in the return of one of our favorite podcast contests. We have not done this for years, so we decided to bring it back. It is our Name That Tech Tune Challenge. Here is your challenge. Identify the technology franchise with which this piece of music is associated. If you think you know the answer, send it to podcast@geekwire.com. That's podcast@geekwire.com. And from the pool of correct answers, we'll pick one person at random to win a limited edition GeekWire t-shirt. You two have seen these new shirts.
Oh, I have one.
Yes.
We finally got V-necks.
Exactly.
Very exciting times at GeekWire.
All right, let's listen to the tune. Kurt, we're listening here. Do you know what it is?
I don't yet. It sounds like video game music to me, but...
You're on the right path, and it is a franchise that was in the news this past week as well. That's probably a huge hint that I just gave away, combined with your guess.
I have no idea.
Good, perfect, because then you won't give it away to our listeners. So if you think you know the answer, send it to podcast@geekwire.com with the subject line Tech Tune. And from the pool of correct answers, we'll pick one person at random to win that limited edition GeekWire shirt. Tune in to a future episode of the podcast for the answer. And thanks for playing, everybody. I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm Kurt Schlosser.
Thanks for listening to GeekWire, and we'll talk to you next time.